हियर एज आई सेड प्लम्बिंग डिफेक्ट है तो तुम होलिस्टिक का क्या करोगे, वो तो पार्ट को तो तुमको वर्कआउट करना है ना.
करेक्ट.
इफ देर इज अ प्रॉब्लम कंसीविंग बिकॉज ऑफ अ फिब्रॉइड, यू हैव टू गेट इट
रिमूवल. मस्ट.
सो दैट्स व्हाट आई हैव बीन सेइंग दैट होम्योपैथी फॉर क्रोनिसिटी, फॉर बैलेंसिंग ऑफ द हार्मोन्स, टू डेवलप अ फर्टाइल बैकग्राउंड सो दैट इवन योर ट्रीटमेंट्स वर्क. देयर सो मेनी फेल्ड IVF साइकल्स.
या
व्हाई? Because there is no balancing of the hormones. You're doing it everything by stimulating the ovary, creating a good bed for the embryo to get. How much will you pump the body?
Hello and welcome to Empyrea Connects, the podcast focused on family well-being. Today's episode is dedicated to health and gynecological challenges many women face, from puberty to menopause, infertility to fertility, and everything in between. We are here to shed lights on these issues, share expert advice, and empower women with knowledge. So let's understand what matters the most and understand your body better. Let's welcome our expert for today, Dr. Kukreja Ekilani. Hello, doctor. Welcome to Empyrea Connects.
Thank you, Madhvi, for such a warm welcome.
I would like to know, in your practice, when you started the practice in a couple of years back, what was the common question or common concern women had during that time? Yeah. And what is the common concern now when you are consulting a lot many younger women?
Yes. So earlier it was more to do with the pathological stuff like fibroids, you know, or something to do with severe menorrhagia or metrorrhagia, that is the menstrual irregularities. But nowadays we are getting more and more young girls, say they've just done their class 10th grade or maybe a little more earlier, and they are coming up with symptoms of irregular periods, and that's the way we get, you know, a sonography done and we find that they're having PCOD.
Okay.
So because of the awareness, the parents also are concerned and they like to screen and let, you know, find out what it is. It's not a bad idea, but, you know, we are seeing more and more cases of PCOS also to do with painful periods, dysmenorrhea, and pathological condition which is called as endometriosis, where earlier we were, there were very less number of cases, but now we find these cases coming up more and more. So now that's directly linked to the hormonal changes which are setting up too early in women, say because of the lifestyle changes or because of simply stress. So these are the things which we see commonly. To start with PCOD or a PCOS, it's the same thing. So it's a group of symptoms or syndrome. It's a clinical manifestation. It is not called as a disease per se.
Okay.
Because during the each cycle, the follicles mature. So the ovaries, the number of eggs on the either side, the follicles start maturing, and only one dominant follicle, forms a proper egg, and then it gets to for the cycle of ovulation, that is on the 14th day. But this whole synchronous process has been disrupted. So there are more and more follicles which are maturing, but none of them are getting into a proper ovulation, and none of the ovum, the quality of eggs is also reducing. So over a period of time, not as they age, they get married, we are facing problems of infertility also.
Okay.
So the cases of infertility are also on a rise, because women don't want to conceive for all the obvious right reasons, say career, so they delay, and when they decide to conceive, then their biological clock and even the quality of ova has regressed, or the quality is not all that good. So we don't have a very happy, easy experience with the pregnancy, the full 9 month, you know. So the difficulties carrying the baby or producing a healthy child is fine, but then we have problems, say, with the cervical incompetence, so we have to put them to bed rest. So all these things are increasing. So it's not a very easy pregnancy, and so this is what that changes in the presentation of complaints when it comes to young girls or during their childbearing years. So there's a change.
Now coming to regular periods, what is technically, medically, what is a normal period and what is irregular period?
Yeah, so it's basically what is in the books or is a 28-day cycle. But it's never like that. A woman can have a 22 to 35 day cycle that is considered to be normal, depending upon each one's, individual genetic presentation. So the 22 day cycle also is considered to be normal. A 35 day cycle is also okay. But okay. When the cycle shifts, a 35 day cycle shifts to 22 day cycle, then it's then we worry.
In 12 months, you have 1 or 2 months where the days are days
okay.
Here and there.
Yes,
that's normal.
Fine. That's okay. Fine. So when you have repeated shifts of more number of days, then we worry. But that's also okay unless until we don't find something, major grave changes. All right. So that is the normal menstrual cycle. So first it starts with the, shedding of the endometrium. That's then it is the 14th day of ovulation. So, and then the progesterone buildup happens if the egg is ready and the right point, the sperm also and the embryo formation happens, it is good. Otherwise the levels drop. The progesterone drops, the estrogen drops, and the endometrium, which was building up to receive the embryo, begins to break, And then over a period of time, the shedding starts back. That is the menstrual cycle. So we call it that the uterus is crying over the lost ovum. That is how it is written in the books when you don't conceive.
Oh.
So it's each while, during each cycle, the number of ovas which have matured, and out of that only one ova, which was a lucky one, get to it, was there, and that also didn't get fertilized. That it's a very statement which used to, how have they written this in the book? But actually it is there, that the uterus is weeping over the lost ovum.
weeping. That's
a shedding of the endometrium. They're talking about the menstrual cycle.
Yeah. And what happens later if your uterus is weeping? And
that's a normal cycle. That's just to make the topic interesting.
Okay.
So that we understand the synchronous rise and fall of hormones.
Mm-hmm.
So it gets to a mind, okay, this is how it is.
Okay. What your health is when you are young and when you reach towards menopause, these symptoms keep on changing. So every month you might have the same symptom or you might not have the same symptoms. But usually they come up with some emotional challenges or they come with painful
periods.
So what causes them?
Yeah, some amount of pain is normal. So that's called as primary dysmenorrhea. The problem starts when the pain increases during menses, before menses, or the pain continues even after the menses have been done. Then it's the point that we have to investigate why the pain. What is the problem? Is there any adhesion? Is there any ovarian cyst? Or is the endometriosis which is developing? Now, what is endometriosis? So endometriosis is the uterine lining which develops, that is the endometrium. And the similar tissues are found outside the cavity, which is not normal.
Okay.
So it will be found over the ovaries or it would be found over the fallopian tubes. And they are under the direct influence of the changing hormones. So as the endometrium builds up, because of the normal change of the hormones. Similarly, the other areas are also developing. Here we have a proper way the menses flow out of the cervix, vagina and out. But over there is nothing, there is no pathway to out. So there is swelling. There is tissues which are swollen up. There is inflammation. And that causes, adhesions, or it's an abnormal thing which is there. And that causes pain. So you may have pain while passing urine, you may have pain while passing motions. During periods are very painful. So it is a pathological condition. So it is one of the causes of infertility also. So imagine the fallopian tubes are sticking, the pathway is blocked. So how does the travel happen? The ovum, which is traveling from the ovary to the, the fundus of the uterus, and then it gets embedded and wanting to meet the sperm. So that whole pathway is blocked. That's because of the adhesion. This is just one reason. It also could be tuberculosis. We have to take a history to understand what is the reason of adhesions.
And also very difficult to understand what is happening inside. Like say your tubes are, like, you know, there is a blockage or something. Very difficult to understand from outer side, you know. Like so, at what, when do you recommend that the testing should happen?
So we have various techniques and investigation methods like, HSG. So we introduce a contrast dye to the, you know, to the cervix and the, the vagina cervix, and it enters and we see the patency of the tubes, or we find any blockages or the areas where you find that there's a blockage, there's something not normal. So these are the ways of understanding what are the areas which are affected. Similarly, we have a hysteroscope. So you're actually like a camera you put inside and check what is the, you know, what's happening inside, whether there's a fibroid or there's a thickened, endometrium, or there are a lot of tissues which are there which are developing without reason, and we have to figure out what it is. So we take out a little bit of a sample and send for, you know, HP, that is histopathological investigation on doubt. So there are a lot of things, and very in a methodical way we can find out if there's a mechanical blockage which is not allowing the pregnancy to occur. Apart from that, clinically also, we can take a full case history to understand the metabolic syndrome, that we have diabetes, blood pressure, or if you've had a family history of some major grave illness, say cancer. So we take a detailed case history to understand the constitution, where it could go, what could be the probable reasons for infertility. And once we figure out, we try and fix that.
All these examinations, they happen when you are planning to conceive, or you are planning for motherhood.
Not really. They could be painful, as I said. Some disturbance here and there, not a problem. Some pain, some irregular, you know. It's only on the screening you'll come to know that there is some pathology which is picking up.
So having fibroids also, like, you know, if you just say you have fibroids, but then you have not planned to conceive.
Yes.
Till then, they don't create any issue.
Fibroids are basically because of the estrogen dominance. So during the childbearing years, when the estrogen is, you know, good, and some abnormality happens in some other axis, or, you know, the hypothalamic pituitary ovarian axis is what is responsible for all the cycle and everything in the woman's life space. So if there's problem with the hormonal change, or there are growths which are found in the uterus, then it could actually occupy the space where the baby is going to develop. So where will the baby come up? Because the fibroid has already occupied. There is no other way, we have to remove it. So what are the causative factors for fibroid? We don't know exactly why does it happen. It can be found at the fundal, it can be found at the posterior, part of the uterus, anterior fibroid. So there's a study, if it is found on the posterior part, it may be linked to infertility. Plus, at what layer does it develop? It's a subserous, submucosal fibroid. It's intramural. So it's a lot of deep study to understand where it is growth and where. Sometimes a small fibroid bleeds heavily, and sometimes such a big fibroid doesn't bleed. It goes unnoticed unless until you take out a sonography.
Does it depend on the place of the fibroid?
Yes, it's a study, meaning we don't have discrete, say, this is a, but the clinical, so if you attend the rotations, you understand, okay, doctor is saying, a posterior fibroid, that this can get to infertility, you know, it's more. So these are clinical judgments, which can vary.
Yeah.
It can be contested, but it's just, it's a discussion, so we can always, you know, talk about it.
So let's say after pregnancy is not in the picture, maybe pregnancy is not in the picture, but fibroids can be painful to many, and removal is also a stressful situation. Should we remove it, not remove it?
Correct.
At times, and they reoccur in body.
Yeah, that's it. That's how we'll come to it now, that what caused the fibroid. So general take is that disbalance of the hormones. So we have to check upon it. What is the issue? Is it hypothyroid? Is it the insulin resistance? What are the underlying other adjacent things which are happening in the body? Always you have to look at the totality. You can't look at the fibroid, take it out and done. No, it will again reoccur. That's what you said.
Like, yes, right? Yes. Yeah?
So we have to work upon the basis, the soil. Why did it develop at the first place? Did you find some abnormal, changes which you have not addressed too? So work upon that. Work upon the lifestyle errors. Reduce the obesity in case you're obese. Yeah. In case you're stressed, again, ease out your life. If you are, you know, not having good night's sleep, then again, you're in for trouble.
Yeah.
So few things added together can lead to a problem.
Okay, and how about reoccurring them? Say, yes. Let's say once you have a removal.
Yes.
So women in 40s and 50s, they experience reoccurrence of fibroids. So
correct.
How do you address that?
So conservatively, if you ask me, in allopathy practice, they do give medicines to stop the growth.
Does it really work?
Exactly, that's what I'm coming to.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm coming to. At the period of point, they tell us, wait, hold on for a while, let's see how it proceeds. If it is causing too much of a trouble, then we can think, but hold on for a while. Meanwhile, we can work upon the imbalance of the hormones and we can give good homeopathic medicines here because we are, again, as I said, we are going by the nature of the person, the setup of the hormones. According to the setup of the hormones, there are individual treatment or individual, portraits which are there. Okay, this constitution may require this because they are vulnerable to this. So there are innumerable constitution, and that is where the art lies in homeopathy, to find out which medicine will work good for this lady. Yeah. It's not as generic in allopathy. Sabke liye ek dawai nahi chalti hai. And if you think logically, how will it work? It is a room and four people are sitting. Why only two suffer and two don't suffer? Right? So that is, we are talking about individuality. So similarly, you are different, I am different. My makeup is different, my hormonal setup is different.
True.
Till I don't work upon it and give medicines accordingly, it will not work. Just the regular, the synthetic hormones that are being prescribed, and they don't even have good results. The people realize, but it's okay. We have surgery, we have laparoscopies, we have, we have to talk as the management of the patient. We are not here to understand the goodness of homeopathy and how bad allopathy is. No, sorry, I'm
when
not
When do you
into
recommend
it.
Laparoscopy?
See, basically, whenever the infertility cases come up and we are not able to understand what's the problem, then it's a very small invasive procedure to understand, to see what's going wrong. So you can visualize the tubes, you can see everywhere outside the uterus also, you can see if there are adhesions outside in the pelvic cavity. So it's a very good thing. Laparoscopy is a gem milling, without opening the abdomen, you're actually peeping in what's happening. So it's a good thing.
Yeah.
It's a very good investigation tool, and everybody should, should go through it rather than just depending on clinical practice. At times we are stuck. No. We need to see what's happening inside.
True.
So see the imaging, see the sonography, do the transvaginal scope to check the condition of the ovaries, which are way below, which the USG doesn't cover. So polyps, the cervical polyps, which are the lower down, the ovaries can be visualized best in the transvaginal scope. So infertility, it's really nice. It's like a detective science. Where is it going?
So what are the kind of treatments that you have for infertility?
Infertility. See, as I said, we go by the constitution of the patient. So we go by their, if the person is obese or the cervix is relaxed, it doesn't hold the semen that well, it flows out, there's a certain constitution. So we again are getting to a general level. I'm not talking about the cervix alone, I'm talking about the general muscles, the skeleton that is weaker. Then again, your genetic history. If your mother, father have had illnesses, you may be vulnerable to it. So we give medicines to minimize those genetic tendencies. Lifestyle habits, it's up to the patient how well they manage their stress
levels. But I think when you plan pregnancies and child, everyone becomes very careful about, you know, the lifestyle and everything becomes a little more disciplined than before.
No, but your initial wrongdoings. Say, suppose you are into smoking, you are into, you know, drinking. It all has an effect upon the ovum. So how does the quality of egg deteriorate? You know, so it's because of the pollution. It's because of, again, the type of vegetables you're eating. It has sprayed. Again, the same thing. The plastic ware, it has got certain things which can mimic estrogen and produce such effects. Then again, smoking, drinking, it reduces the quality of the eggs. So you're in for trouble again. So if you decide now I'm going to, you know, it's 30, I'm now 35 years of age. Now today, now doctor, I want to conceive. Chalo, let's go to the doctor. It doesn't happen.
Yeah.
The uterus is such a thing, it requires a good environment to hold the baby for complete 9 months. With a good frame of mind so that the baby is healthy. Baby is born in a good mood. That's very important. Your mood will determine his, you know, mindset.
Correct.
That's true. That's true.
So let's say somebody is smoking or say alcoholic. So after how many months of detox, the uterus is now thinking that it is properly detoxed and then
now
ready
this
for
this is really relative. This again is getting into a very, you know, practical way. I want to do this, but tell me.
Because of the work stress or like, you know, requirements of social life and like in certain way, now women have to present themselves.
Moderation is okay.
Okay.
Anything, moderation. Yeah. Anything in excess, your body will not be able to take it. As simple as that. Even if you have to have a good meal, as you know, moderation. Ek aadh bar kha liya, you know, once or twice a month, thrice a month, if we are eating outside, it's okay. The body can adjust, you know. But if you do it more and more, the body gets into one compensation. Don't blame the body. It's trying to cope up, mind you. You're pushing too hard, you know, putting a lot of pressure. That is the time it gives up. And then the series of things start. And then you have resistant obesity. It's not working, doctor. I'm walking, nothing, no inch law, meaning what is it? You know, so it takes time. Give your body also time to recuperate. What wrong you have done, it will take those many years to come back. So better not do it because your fertility years, you know, are, say, so that's why everything in
that
moderation.
That will overall impact your health, you know, the egg, quality of eggs and then health of uterus. Yes.
So we're talking about women, there are problems with males also when it comes to the infertility. So the motility of the sperms, the quality of the sperms, so that also is equally important.
See, both men and women have like a different body, I understand, but also work culture is same for all. Like, you know, it is stressful, demanding, and it needs certain attention. Like, you know, that you can't always give that much attention to your body. And, you know, in that case, if you have to give that much attention, you have to pause. You have to stop.
Stop.
You know.
Rethink, redo.
Rethink. Yeah, that's
that's a normal correction. We do it on any plane of whatever you're facing problems, we try to rectify. Same as with the body.
When you are planning for childbirth or pregnancy, there is a break in your career. There is a break in many things that you used to do before, but now you are not continuing that because of your the body, how it looks now and how it is changing, you know, from inside. So the stress of new change, you know, what is going to
adapting
happen.
Adapting to the change.
Yeah. So that also has a stress on a body. Yes. And like, you know, it goes for both men and women.
Men and women.
How do you deal with that?
See, basically we have to be, you know, counseling is very important here. You know, there are certain things which can be done by talking to the patient, especially to a couple. You know, once that thought is, you know, they get into it, okay, this is the logic is this, then they can think over it for a while and they come up with solutions themselves. Because we don't know the whole picture.
Correct.
In their house, yeah. With the working, their financial, you know, their emotional backup. Meaning, it's very difficult unless you sit and talk it out with them.
Yeah.
So the major important field in infertility when you are dealing is understanding the overall aspect of that couple. What is wrong? And then do corrective measures. Yeah. And that's why we have certain things that, as you said, the career takes a break. So there are things which are, you know, this freezing of the egg, the oocyte that we are having, the freezing of the embryo, so that, you know, you don't miss out upon parenthood. It's okay. So
now coming to freezing of eggs and embryo, that becomes a part of IUI and IVF, which are also, again, infertility treatments. So what do you have to say about this as a homeopathy doctor?
Yeah, it's okay. See, here, as I said, plumbing defect hai, to tum holistic ka kya karoge, wo to part ko to tumko work out karna hai na.
Correct.
If there is a problem conceiving because of a fibroid, you have to get it
removed. Must.
So that's what I've been saying, that homeopathy for chronicity, for balancing of the hormones, to develop a fertile background so that even your treatments work. There's so many failed IVF cycles.
Yeah.
Why? Because there is no balancing of the hormones. You're doing it everything by stimulating the ovary, creating a good bed for the embryo to get. How much will you pump the body? Why not give them, you know, medicines which will balance in a little conservative way with a homeopathic approach is good. So when we get cases, IVF cycle fail ho gaya, doctor, I'm very depressed. Yeah, you just hold on for a while. Take a break. Something is not working out.
True.
Let's put you upon medicines just for the general enhancement of your immunity. For balancing your hormones. You never know. There are patients who have conceived so nicely. And with simple assisted procedures like IUI.
Can you differentiate between IUI and IVF? Yeah.
I will just touch it superficially.
Yes.
IUI is intrauterine insemination, where you introduce semen into a woman's vagina at the time of ovulation, so that we facilitate the embryo formation. And so that at the right time, at the ovulation time, it happens, and it is it can help, place embryo at the right time and then at the right location. So that's an easier option.
Okay.
IVF is a little difficult because we have to create an embryo outside of the body. So you take up an egg, you take up a sperm from the male patient, work upon it, take the best quality sperm, and then in a petri dish or something, what they do is they unite both, form the embryo, and then go and place it back into the uterine cavity because some pathway block is there, so you have to embed it.
Okay.
Now, this IVF, everything is successful. Everything, the follicular, everything went good, sperm quality also, but still the endometrium did not receive the embryo properly because the system was not ready to accept. The woman's body was not in a good balanced state of hormones to receive the embryo. So it went waste.
So actually when you take these treatments, they prepare you with medicines, with hormones, and a lot of examination happens, a lot of medication is given during that time. So in a way, ideally your body should be prepared, no? For embryo acceptance.
That is the problem, no? That you have to handle imagine, we should thank God how God has created a superhuman machine. We are doing it one by one and still we are not able to succeed. That means it's so multifactorial. The synchronicity of fall and rise of hormones and to the back-to-back embryo and then... So, production of a human body and how it functions, ye to kuch bhi nahi hai. We are just dealing with the infertility, the chromosomal abnormalities. So God is great. The way the human body baby is created is a marvel. And that's what we are going into it, dhire dhire. We will succeed. We'll get to it. Don't worry.
Very medical optimistic.
Yes. So the goodness of allopathy and with the help of homeopathy to balance the hormones rather than pumping medicine just to stimulate the ovary to produce good eggs, it's a problem, the other hormones are also getting triggered. Too much of ovarian stimulation is also not good.
Does that affect the acceptance of embryo in your body and resulting in failed pregnancy?
It's okay. Depends upon the doctor's expertise also, how judgment
works. Also,
that's very important. So anyway, we see so much of desperation where couples are getting, nahi ho raha hai. I said, just leave it for a while. Just take a break. Don't shift your IVF centers. It's not going to work. There's something, the problem is somewhere else where they're not able to handle it. Just hold on for a while.
Yeah. Yes.
So it depends. So each case is different. Sometimes we find such good solutions. Nothing. Normally also people conceive. There's a lady who was so obese. She tried so many IVF cycle. Nothing. I just told her to, you know, lose weight.
Just
concentrate upon your lifestyle. Concentrate. Be happy. In 6-8 months, she lost weight. The good part is that the ovulation, which was not happening normally, the normal ovulation started to happen. Otherwise, all cycles were going anovulatory. Absolutely. Then they tried everything. Ova removal, which was not a very good quality. So the problem, we try and give solutions. It may not work. As I said, it depends upon the individual expertise. So take the patient, the only advice to the patient is take the best of both the parties. I don't know about Ayurveda, so I'm not in a position to speak. Must be good solutions there also.
Yeah.
So too much of intervention also sometimes spoils the case. Do it when it is needed.
Yeah. So, but actually IUI and IVF happens, do it when it's needed, you know, that kind of, when it's the last.
Nowadays everything has become so, you'll find so many IVF centers mushrooming, so that quality of service which patients are receiving is also deteriorating.
Also, the time you get married is like, you know, earlier it used to be like, you know, child marriage, then it is moved to 18-year-old, and now it is like, you know, 28 is considered as very young to get married, you know. So the age of marriage also changed, like, you know, your profession is there. So obviously, like, you know, child, planning for a family, planning for child and pregnancy comes very delayed, you know, that's very normal. But you also mentioned about egg freezing, so can you tell us when is the right time to freeze
that? The woman is born, a girl child, a baby is born with a fixed number of eggs depending upon the genetic inheritance or type. So when the baby is born, if you check, if you're talking about the numbers, the eggs are in millions. But as the puberty comes in, the puberty sets in, it comes to, the number comes to lakhs. And during the childbearing phase, when you get married and you decide to have, it is actually in thousands. So this is how the quantity of the quality as well as the numbers are reducing, you know. So it's also the why, if you ask me why the eggs are, you know, the numbers are going down, it's because of pollution, one. Secondly, because of the use of, say, pesticides, because of the soil use spray upon and those vegetables we are eating. So that is how the thing gets aggravated. The egg reserve goes down. And habits, we come to the habits, the smoking and drinking. So this is one of the leading causes for, and of course, stress.
True.
Stress meaning high cortisol levels, you know, and oxidative stress goes high, and so the eggs are going down in numbers. It's okay. So, but what happens is that during each cycle also you're losing good amount of eggs. So there are two ovaries. So simultaneously in each ovary, say 10 eggs will start to mature, follicle will mature. Each one has an egg into it, but all don't mature into a good quality egg. Only one dominant follicle, as we spoke, will get to a good, and the egg will be released. So you are losing each cycle also, you are losing. So it's very important that you plan your pregnancy earlier, the better. Yeah.
Okay.
But because of, as we said, we have career, we have so much more to do in life. So it's okay, but you should have your first child, say you should conceive at least before the age of 34, 35. You have got very, you know, eventless pregnancies. You don't have complications. The child is healthy.
Yeah.
So I think that's quite okay. Before 35 is fine. But women, when they delay it, it's a problem.
the next chapter comes in our life is a menopause. So how do you address menopause? Because that is also very challenging and crucial. You have different challenges during that time. So what do you have to say about it?
So menopause, we get a lot of patients asking for medicines for hot flashes. Hot flashes are there, but it's not something very grave a problem. It can be managed. It's basically because of the imbalance of the hormones and connected with the thermoregulation mechanism in your brain, there is a disturbance, and so you're getting the hot flashes. The theme is to just go through it peacefully. Things will subside with little bit of help. So you don't have to go become very restless about it. It's just a passing phase. Something very important to talk about is the osteoporosis that happens during this phase.
So because, can you explain that?
Yeah, so because of the declining level of the estrogen, you know, the bones are getting, the skeletal is getting weaker and weaker. So it's very important to have strength training, you know, during, not during, but even before, if your lifestyle is good. So if you maintain good quality bones, muscles, and your, you know, the cartilages, everything is in good shape, then actually when the menopause strikes, when there is no good hormone support, the body will not deteriorate that faster. So it's very important to have a healthy lifestyle during, before, after menopause. That goes without saying.
So, like, you know, when we are talking about our health in general, there are a group of doctors or experts, and, like, you know, they recommend strength training, but they also strongly recommend yoga, you know, for your health.
Definitely. Yoga is something I always say comes first in the priority. Why? Because it is not only helping ventilate you, it is also giving good amount of oxygen to all parts of the body so that the inflammation goes down. The muscles, meaning, you know, it's very important. Good oxygenation, good diet, good sleep. These are the basics. We keep talking about it. But implementation is where the problem comes because of the practical problems. No, that because
the other implementation issue is the diet.
Yes. So you have so much of things going around, you know, as we said, you know, Swiggy, the, at the tip of a, say, button, you can call for things.
Yeah.
If that easy availability was not there, go to the kitchen, prepare nice. It's not feasible. You can't prepare such nice fat-filled, you know, cheese and pura. It takes, so it was an impediment earlier.
Yeah, tongue-tempting.
Yes,
food.
So now it's become so quick. And that is adding to the trouble. The aerated drinks, the high-fat diet, high-carb diet. So it's affecting the insulin sensitivity. So it's like you have a high sugar which is floating in the blood, and the insulin is also more to combat it. The muscles are not able to use the insulin because they are already loaded with the, you know, the glucogen is like the glucose which has been stored is full. The muscles are refusing to take any more store. And here we are taking more and more. So what happens? Finally, the brunt is on the pancreas to create more and more insulin. And finally, that store is also depleted. And then, say, free, you know, sugar traveling in the blood, and you're diagnosed as diabetes.
PCOS and PCOD are also has lot about food, you know, what kind of food, the gut health, everything starts, that management starts getting into picture, you know, aggressively when you you understand that you have a PCOD or PCOS.
Yes. So if I talk about what is the link between PCOS and gut health, the gut health is very, very important. What happens is when you have a faulty diet, the permeability of the intestine, that is the wall, which allows the right type of nutrients or vitamins to get to the bloodstream, gets affected. Things that shouldn't go to the blood because of the abnormal permeability, because it is, you're loaded your stomach with so much, there's fermentation, there is a wrong type of food, the permeability changes. Now, this is something, you know, not written in the books, but sometimes you ponder what's going wrong. From where is the insulin resistance cropping? Why? So definitely what you are eating is one thing that you have to work upon.
True.
Secondly, movement, the body movement is very important. So if the the muscles, if you exercise, and also you are losing that, your body is utilizing the stored fat. Sometimes the liver is loaded with fat.
Yeah.
That's because of the same. It trickles down to the insulin resistance. The muscles are saying, no, we are full. The liver is loaded with fat, but we have to change our lifestyle habits.
Next concern that every woman has is the infection.
Yes.
The UTI infection or you have vaginal fungal infections. Many sort of infection they come across. How to
manage
that?
See, we always talk about the flora of the gut. The similar flora is there in the tract of the urinary tract also. The kidneys, the ureters, the bladder. So when that flora gets disturbed, you are inviting infections. You're making yourself vulnerable to get more and more infections. Now, why does the flora gets disturbed?
Yeah, true.
That's again, same hormonal imbalances, your stress. And of course, hygiene, that comes later.
Yeah.
But first, when the flora is disturbed, you get more and more infections. Plus, they are opportunistic infections, meaning it will remain dormant.
Okay.
The organism will remain sit dormant out there, and when it gets a conducive environment, say an imbalance of hormone or stress or exposure to unhygienic condition, it will flourish again.
Okay.
So this is how pitted UTIs, that's the resultant. And you keep taking antibiotics again and again, adding to the trouble. Once in a while it's okay, then you go that this antibiotic is not working.
Yeah.
You're resistant to it, then get to a higher antibiotic. But antibiotics itself are responsible for changing the flora. You're solving the problem, but what about the recurrence? How do we do that? The private parts, there's too much of sweat, you're sitting all while for hours together, your profession doesn't allow you to move around, or you yourself are, you're sitting in the chair for long hours.
Yeah.
That's the time. The ventilation gets disturbed, the sweating. So all these conditions will invite the growth of organisms which are sitting dormant out there. So the theme is that you should wear, clothing shouldn't be tight. You opt for a cotton clothing.
More breathable.
More breathable. And move about. Even if we are sitting, we should make it a habit to just go here, there, not sit. Unless until you're driving, you're in the cockpit and you can't move. But I think they also have trouble because they develop conditions like piles. Why? Because they are so in enclosed spaces. We have so many patients who are flying, coming up with fissures, with piles. Because food habits, sitting in a constricting space, constipation because your bowels, and it's a stressful job. So it's a complete thing that leads to a certain condition. So we'll come back to this. So always see to it that you are you wear good clothing, cotton clothing, you're moving about. And the most important thing I would like to tell again, the stress levels lead to such repeated recurrence. The Savlon, the Dettol, they're helpful. And always remember not to scrub the area. When you scrub the areas, always just mop the areas.
Yeah.
Why? Because when you scrub, it's getting inflamed.
Suddenly after 10 years or 5 years, you have bleeding happening. Or you have some symptoms which you used to experience during, when you had menstruation and all that. So what is this a warning sign and how women should address this?
See, once the menopause set in, meaning you don't have had periods for 12 months, meaning 1 year, there's absence of menses, you'll be you have reached menopause. Post that, if there is bleeding, it definitely needs to be investigated quickly as possible. Because sometimes the fibroids which are left, which we, left it thinking the menopause will come and, it will regress. They may again get activated, whether it is because the bleeding is because of the fibroids. But the alarming thing is that one should always be aware about the endometrial lining, which post-menopause becomes thin, meaning below 10 mm, 8 mm. So you have to see that the endometrium shouldn't get activated because of the change of hormones. If the endometrium becomes thicker, it is secreting, that means it has come under the influence of the changing hormones.
Okay.
Because of stress, because of genetic, meaning that is something we don't know why it should have had happened, but it happens, and that is the time it's alarming. You
okay.
have to get to your gynecologist, take out the sonography, see what's happening, why the endometrium or the fibroid or the polyp is bleeding. That's a growth.
Yeah.
So it's very essential, because endometrial cancers are very common post-menopause. Menopause has reached after 10, 15 years because of, I don't know, anxiety, because of stress. That causative factors, we don't know which causes the bleeding. But at that time, we have to take active steps before it spreads.
I'm sure this holistic approach is going to help a lot of our audience. Thank you so much for coming to Imperia Connects.
Thank you, Madhvi. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you so much, Doctor.
Thanks.
Thank you for tuning into today's episode. We hope this discussion has given you valuable insight into women's health and how to address common gynecological challenges. If you wish to connect with our guest today, please check out the details in the description box. Remember, taking care of your health is the first step to feeling your best, and don't hesitate to seek help when you need it. Until next time, stay healthy and stay connected with Imperia Connects.